Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Woj and Lowe Show, and welcome to the hazards of pre-taping. Friday night mayhem among the Washington Wizards, Memphis Grizzlies, and Phoenix Suns. A proposed three-team deal that would have sent Trevor Ariza to Washington, Kelly Oubre to Memphis, blew up when Memphis and Phoenix couldn't agree on which Brooks, Marshawn or Dillon, had been agreed upon and put in the deal. So Trevor Ariza is back on the market. He returns to the Suns. Kelly Oubre to the Wizards. Austin Rivers back to the Wizards. Welcome to NBA trade season.
Welcome to the Woj and Lowe NBA special, where it is the unofficial start of NBA trading season. And here to hash everything out with me is our ace NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski. How you doing, sir?
Zach, let's get to this.
Shockingly, as we start NBA trade season here in December, it's like a two-month trade season, the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James, neither of which is a stranger to melodrama, are at the center of the universe. Of course, it's LeBron, it's Los Angeles. And one of the more interesting subplots of the season so far is that the Lakers have actually turned into a pretty damn good team before we realized it. I mean, they could now talk themselves into, after an 0-3 start, they could now talk themselves into the idea that, hey, maybe we're like the second best team in the West now. Like, even if we don't make any moves, maybe we're the second best team in the West. But they do feel, with all their young players, they own all their first round picks going forward. They have LeBron James, who no matter how often he says, I'm going to be patient, is not going to be patient. They do feel like a team that's going to be active all the way to the February 7th trade deadline. Do you see that as well?
Yeah, and here's the line they have to walk. They can't give away, they're not going to give away picks and their top young players in some deal that makes them incrementally better this season, because they've got to save all those assets for Anthony Davis, a big trade this summer, either pre or post free agency. But, you know, that's why they've looked at players like Trevor Ariza, guys who are on one-year deals who don't have money going forward. And like you said, LeBron talks about, I'm going to be patient. I'm in this for the long run. You know, we're going to grow these young players. And immediately, what is it? Get me Tyson Chandler. Go get me Trevor Ariza. Get me veterans to help me win now. But Houston falling off has made a lot of teams feel like, hey, maybe, you know, we can be in that upper echelon. Maybe we can sneak into a conference final and we'll be the team that loses.
There are literally 12 teams who could reasonably talk themselves into, hey, why not us? You mentioned the Lakers, their big summer plans, right? They have all these young guys who they view as trade assets. I think Ingram has been a little bit more of an awkward fit with LeBron than they had thought. You know, he's not taking any threes. Mm-hmm. They thought they would turn him into a more of a spot up shooter around LeBron. They also have $39 million in cap space this summer. And I think the absolute dream scenario, people talk about, it's like they could trade for Anthony Davis or sign a free agent. The dream scenario is that they do both. And the order in which they do it is fill the cap space first with a free agent and then trade the good stuff that we have left over for Anthony Davis. Because if you trade the good stuff for Anthony Davis without a free agent, then it becomes harder mathematically, because he makes so much money, to get that next guy, and you have like a bare cupboard. That's the dream, right?
But what elite free agent are they getting, Zach? Which one?
Well, that's the question, because this issue, and Kevin Durant talked about it recently, of who, what kind of young player, what kind of in their prime superstar would want to play with LeBron, the challenges of playing with LeBron. He cited Chris Bosh and Kevin Love taking steps back in their role, right?
Yeah, and listen, he said out loud what everybody has been saying privately. Now, he talked about the fit on the court and how other players will fit around LeBron. But the question, and for some, the bigger question is, where do I fit off the court in L.A. with LeBron James? Because other star players who want a voice in the organization, want a voice in how things go. They saw part of why Kyrie Irving left Cleveland was he had no voice there with management, with the coaching staff. LeBron and his group, they run things. They run the organization. They have the voice. No one's going to come in and take that away from them. And the other thing, too, is players learn. I think Kevin Love taught this to a lot of guys. And Kyrie, at times, when you play with LeBron, he's going to get all the credit if you win. And if you don't win, you get the blame. You didn't do enough to help LeBron James and the team. And so especially in a free agent class where you have most of the big stars have already won championships. Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving. We know he's not going to LA. And of course, Kawhi Leonard. They've all won championships. They're not ring chasing. And you see those guys looking around for comfort, market, having an organization built around them. And those are all the things working against the Lakers among those elite free agents.
Yeah, let's talk names. I mean, KD kind of telegraphed his intentions. Kawhi, I think we all would agree that the Lakers are certainly not the favorite, are probably a distant third at best.
It's the Clippers.
Jimmy Butler, I don't think there's – he seems to have found a home in Philadelphia. They're certainly confident they're going to re-sign him. Klay Thompson, I think the Warriors are going to max him out. Kemba Walker, I think the Hornets will max him out, and they can offer another year. We didn't talk about DeMarcus Cousins, but if you think you're going to get Anthony Davis or have a shot at it, I don't know that you want to reunite the Bruce brothers that New Orleans had. And then you actually get into an interesting discussion. Is it worth it to go get a Chris Middleton or a Tobias Harris or one of these sort of B-list or second-tier really good players and say, hey, if we got that guy plus LeBron and we were still able to make a trade, like, that's not a bad outcome for us.
No, and listen, and now the other question in L.A. now, too, is what does Magic Johnson do with Luke Walton if this team keeps winning, if they get into the playoffs with a pretty good seed? How's he going to – listen, we know since Magic's taken over – They had been hoping to get their own coach in at some point. We saw it, you know, play out in the meeting they had early in the year where Magic really went after Luke. And
how many games in was that? How many games before the tongue lashing? Like eight? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah. And so if they're going to go to Jeannie Buss and be able to sell her on replacing Luke Walton, they better be trying to do it off a season when they missed the playoffs or off a long losing streak, because she has been fiercely loyal to Luke Walton. That was her hire in every way. And, you know, so far she has kept management off of him. They've allowed Magic, Rob Palenka, to change everything there. They haven't been able to touch Luke Walton.
I never understand these teams that are good and their coach is good. And there's like some impetus to make a change, unless it's one of those David Blatt situations where the guy has lost the locker room and it's sort of become a toxic situation. You just need to change. Like, is there any evidence Luke Walton's not a good coach? The guy's a good coach. They're winning. They're doing well. And I think the easiest thing in the NBA to do is always fire the coach. And if you don't have a replacement lined up, like, what are you doing? Like, the Heat could have fired Eric Spoelstra when they were 9-8. It's the best thing they did was not firing him. If you have a good coach, you got to stick by that coach, because otherwise you risk becoming the Orlando Magic when you're on your seventh coach in 6 years or something like that. Aaron Gordon doesn't even know what to do because he's played under so many systems with so much terminology. Like that's easy, an easy pitfall to fall into.
Magic's view of a coach remains Pat Riley, the fiery old school. That's his view. Luke Walton doesn't fit the mold of what he sees in a head coach.
Maybe they should hire Jim Boylan away from the Bulls. And then we'll talk more about the name, the he who must not be named, Anthony Davis, coming up.
Okay.
So if there was a flashbulb trade of the summer, it was late July when Toronto took what looked like a gamble to some people, what really wasn't really a gamble, to trade DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a first-round pick that's going to be number 28 or something for a top-five player in the NBA in Kawhi Leonard. And it's funny how it feels like a no-brainer now. It felt like a no-brainer then. But as you get closer to free agency and Kawhi's free agency, they're nervous in Toronto. It doesn't feel, even if you would do the trade knowing he would leave, it still feels a little uncomfortable, the idea that he would leave. I mean, they are the best team in the East, and really, that's the only case they can make, right? I mean, their plan for the year is just don't give him a reason. Do everything we can. Don't give him a reason to leave, right?
Yeah. Listen, they can't change the geography. They can't change the weather in Toronto. Those were always going to be things against them in this. You know, home in L.A. has been the focus for Kawhi Leonard through all of this, and it becomes harder with a player who's already won a championship, who, you know, is thinking of quality of life and where he wants to be. Maybe his best chance to win is in Toronto. It may not be his number one priority. And so Toronto knew all season that they would be coming from behind and that the case they made would not be made by Thanksgiving or Christmas or by the trade deadline. It would be June into late June. And having that place and winning grow on him. And, of course, they can offer him more money than anybody else. but so could the Spurs, and he couldn't get out of there fast enough at the end. He didn't stay for the money.
I mean, if they made the finals, it would be fascinating to see a player willingly in his prime leave a team that made the finals. By the way, with the team, they would probably play in the finals, maybe a year or less away from breaking up their stars for financial reasons or whatever else. That would be, you know, even if you say winning isn't his first priority and all these other things, oh, it's cold, and people need to stop whining about how cold it is. It's a wonderful city. That's still kind of a gutsy decision. They just went on a road trip where he didn't play two games at Clippers, at Warriors, and they won both games easily. I mean, he's got to look at that and say, that's kind of interesting.
And, you know, Masai Ujiri made this deal knowing that even if he kept DeMar DeRozan, the way the contracts lined up with Serge Ibaka, with Kyle Lowry, that they probably would turn this roster over in a big way after this season if they didn't advance. So I think the thought all along was, we'll roll the dice with Kawhi. We can't get a player like this in free agency. The only way we can do it is to trade for him. We'll trade for him. We've got a year to sell him on it. But if we don't, then we've got this very good young core, Siakam, Ananobi, Fred VanVleet, and they'll start rebuilding around them. And then you'll probably see Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka in the final years of their deal probably be moved somewhere else and try to get some assets back, and which I think they were going to do anyway if they didn't win this year. So let's try to make a run with Kawhi Leonard, because the one thing they knew, they weren't good enough with DeMar DeRozan.
That's downside, though. It sounds good. Like, oh, we have all these exciting young players. And they are exciting. No, but I'm driving the Pascal Siakam bandwagon. We close it off. No one else is allowed on. So let me ask a very simple question. Is it anyone else besides the Raptors and the Clippers here? The Clippers might be violating, like, stalking rules with how much they're following Kawhi around the NBA. Is there anyone else even in the race?
You said it. Lawrence Frank, the president with the Clippers, they're treating this like a college recruitment. You know, when you're a great player and you go on the July AAU circuit and you see, you know, Jim Boeheim and Mike Krzyzewski and Roy Williams all sitting in the front row of the bleachers wearing their Syracuse Carolina shirts. That's what the Clippers are doing. Now, they haven't been at every game, but to have the president of the organization show up in Toronto, in Milwaukee, just sitting there, players are seeing them. Other times, seeing Raptor officials in a team hotel, it's a unique way they're going about this.
And if there were another team, you know, you could talk about the Lakers in L.A. I'm not sure he wants to go play with LeBron, but the other one that would make a lot of sense would be Philly. Because a defensive wing who could shoot and create off the dribble is exactly what they need. They just went out and got that guy in Jimmy Butler, and I'm not sure Kawhi wanted to go there anyway. But and Jimmy Butler, actually, I think the fit has been offensively better than I thought it would be early with him and Embiid. And Simmons, obviously, Embiid has sounded off a little bit. He's right. When you look at the numbers, he posts up less when those two other guys are on the floor. He takes more threes when they're on the floor. So his role has changed. But, like, that's life, and they'll adjust. Their offense has played really well. He's made these daggers that we're watching now. I mean, it's gone pretty well.
Yeah, and I think Philadelphia is going to be a great experiment into how you put big threes together and the kind of groups of players and people who fit together. Because if you look at the ones who've had great success, you've won championships with, whether you had it was Klay Thompson in Golden State, whether it was Chris Bosh in Miami, that third player better be a guy who's going to defer, who's low maintenance. You have three big egos, big personalities in some ways. Simmons a little less so, but three big egos in Philly. How does that work?
Well, it works. You win a lot of games if you can manage it right. So that's a story with some good teams. I'm excited to talk about some mediocre and bad teams who have spent $120 million on bad teams. So let's talk about that. So in the West right now, we have 14 teams out of 15. 14 teams in the poor Suns. 14 teams that want to make the playoffs. And in the East, we got a bunch of mediocre, capped out bad teams who spent a lot of money and some of them would pop champagne if they just got that eighth seed. A lot of potential buyers around the trade deadline, a lot of desperation, a lot of panic around the league. I think the team that maybe should be panicking the most is Houston. Mm-hmm. 65 games last year, re-signed Chris Paul for a bazillion dollars into his mid to late 30s, re-signed Clint Capella for a lot of money. They are now hovering, painfully hovering around 500, offered four first-round picks for Jimmy Butler. What is this team? What can they do? What are they going to do?
Yeah, their problem right now is they're looking at this, and they know we're not one player away from anything. And the player like Jimmy Butler, who could have made a big impact,
gone.
Is long gone. That kind of player is not available in trade talks. And right now, Houston is looking at itself in the standings and saying, we've got a lottery pick. We're going to trade our pick to make a player who's going to maybe just make us a little bit better. And so they're in a tough spot right now to try to find a way to improve themselves and look up and down their roster. Who wants any of those players?
That's why they offered four picks.
Because they can
take their players too. I do feel like the few teams that are selling, the few teams that are clearly out of it, whether it's Cleveland, Atlanta, New York, whatever. I do think one of them can get creative and maybe make a player available that's maybe not known to be available, someone like Torian Prince in Atlanta, and see what you can get for him. Because, I mean, they just listed all my desperation teams. Detroit, they would throw a party if they got the eighth seed. Charlotte, they're just under the tax. They need to get into the playoffs. Yeah. These teams need upgrades, and they need upgrades badly. And, you know, something is going to happen. But as you said, they also need upgrades, and they need to get off money, which is a tough needle to thread.
Yeah, and the days of teams really wanting to give up, you know, good first round picks to get contracts off, unless you're a team who's trying to clear cap space to go get a big free agent, and you just have to do it. You know, Detroit, you know, they've tried to move Reggie Jackson through a couple different regimes here. They're going to have to put a pick into a deal to do it. So far, Detroit's not willing. You know, Charlotte, same thing. They have a few deals they'd like to move on. But they've got to be careful in Charlotte. They want to re-sign Kemba Walker. And so do they take a step back to try to take...
Well, they got to go all in to make the playoffs unless they just give up trying to bring him back.
And Michael Jordan, that's how he's always run that team. He wants to get in the playoffs. And that's why they've been this team sort of perpetually stuck in that 37-44 win window that you never want to be in the league. And Charlotte has kind of lived there over the last few years.
And Detroit's got this arena, this brand new arena that no one ever goes to. And a team that really they went all in for Blake Griffin. They really would like to make the playoffs. Then you even look in the West. I mean, Portland has fallen badly over the last couple of weeks. They haven't expended. They're over the luxury tax. They have these two really good guards. I mean, it just feels like something has to give. We haven't even talked about Miami, who, you know, sneakily, because they're Miami and they have this sort of sheen of LeBron and the titles and South Beach. Like, I'm not sure they already owe a 2021 pick now to the Sixers. I'm not sure any team in the league has like a bleaker long-term outlook than them.
They don't. And Eric Spoelstra has coached them out of, you know, some teams that should have won a lot fewer games. And it's kind of been some fool's gold because Eric Spoelstra will always get the most out of a group. They paid all those players who went on that late winning streak 2 years ago. And now they're stuck. And listen, you see teams and you don't have teams who want to take on money past next season. They don't want to take these bad contracts on because you have lots of teams with cap space this summer, pretty good free agent class, and you're seeing teams who just you're not getting your bad contracts off onto them unless you're throwing in a pick or two picks, and most teams aren't in position to do that.
Yeah, we'd love to hear the Detroit sales pitch. Like, we want to give you Reggie Jackson without a pick. Interested? Any interest in that? No? Okay, the phone line has already gone dead. You know, where is Dion Waiters in Miami? I don't even know. You know, it's going to be an interesting deadline for all those teams.
Yeah, and listen, you know, Detroit, you know, they went out and paid a coach in Dwayne Casey $7 million plus a season. They didn't do that to do anything but try to get into the postseason. And like I said, that's why they gave up so many assets for Blake Griffin. And, you know, typically getting that eighth seed doesn't mean a lot to people. But, yeah, there's a couple teams. I think you said it. Charlotte's one, and certainly Detroit get into the postseason.
We've already seen Utah make a trade for Kyle Korver. I mean, the West is just so crowded with all of these teams. You know, even the Clippers have kind of fallen off a little bit, and I guess they're saving all their ammo for the summer. But they've got a bunch of sort of expiring or semi-expiring guys that are pretty good players. You know, they could get into it too, right? I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, and I think, listen, this season has surprised the Clippers. They didn't expect to be this good. No one did. What this season's really done for L.A., it's reminded people that Doc Rivers is an elite coach. When he took the front office responsibilities away and going in the free agency, I think that's important for the Clippers to see what Doc has done with this group and kind of take away some of the, you know, he had been muddied a little bit with that previous group, and people are seeing again, this is an elite championship coach.
He's done a great job. I mean, they're one of the best stories in the league, even with this slump. They play so hard, and they've gotten a Montrezl Harrell has come out of not nowhere, but he's a Sixth Man of the Year candidate. I mean, they just have tough, tough players. But in our desperation index, we didn't talk about the number one team. The biggest story in the NBA is what is going to happen to Anthony Davis starting now and going into this summer. And that's what we're going to talk about next. So the biggest story in the NBA, a 25-year-old big man who can do literally everything on the court, is approaching the most pivotal moment of his career and a moment that could pivot literally the entire landscape of the league. And that's obviously Anthony Davis. And Davis is already eligible for the Supermax, the one that Kawhi Leonard didn't want and the one that didn't work for Indiana and Sacramento.
5 years, $235 million.
It's a lot of millions. Mm-hmm. Whatever the millions is, it's a lot of millions. The moment, if he says no to that, the entire league is now in disarray because anyone with trade assets, right, including LeBron's team, including a very good Boston team, will be doing everything it can to get Anthony Davis. It's the biggest story in the league. The entire landscape could change based on what he does. And the Pelicans, who are in desperate need to keep him, are based on what they did in the playoffs last year, I think disappointing so far.
Well, they thought they had a better team back than the team that rolled Portland, you know, and got into the second round of the playoffs. But they've had a lot of injuries, and you know, I'm told Elfrid Payton may be out till the first of the year. He played well for them early, then came back one game, got hurt again. Mirotić another week. They haven't been able to evaluate this group, and that's what Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry have been frustrated with, but they don't have time to evaluate. They've got to see, can we piece together a deal out there? No one's been more aggressive. They tried to get Jimmy Butler. They offered their first-round pick. They offered Mirotić, you know, to Minnesota, didn't get him. And, you know, I think their feeling there is, you know, we're not going to fully mortgage our future and just give our pick away and have Anthony walk out the door unless we can get a difference maker. And that's what they're trying to find here on the trade market before February.
Well, your nightmare is that you trade a future first round pick, forget this year, and Anthony Davis leaves, and all of a sudden you're in a Brooklyn situation where you've given up a really good pick because you're bad.
Right. DeMarcus Cousins, they traded a pick and Buddy Hield, and Hield fits perfectly into that group. And DeMarcus is gone, and now they signed Julius Randle with some of the money there, but they've already missed on that gamble.
Yeah, the Achilles tear DeMarcus suffered last year is one of the great sort of what-if moments of the last two or three years in the NBA. What if he stays healthy? How good do they get? How far do they get? Do they ever get Mirotić? Do they get to, you know, what do they do?
And Boston has been hawking Anthony Davis for years. They always hoped that it would be, whether it's the end of this season or beginning of next before the trade deadline, that they would gather up all those assets, all those picks Danny Ainge has, young players, and they'd be the team to be able to get Anthony Davis. But now you have L.A., and if they get shut out in free agency, they're going to have to take all their young players, try to use them to get Davis.
I mean, their home run scenario is, again, sign someone and enter. And they're going to be teams that come out of the woodwork because it's Anthony Davis, and with apologies to the Pelicans, like, Elfrid Payton's a nice player. If your case for keeping Anthony Davis hinges on Elfrid Payton's health, you have not made a good enough case.
There's no deal that's coming here for New Orleans where Anthony Davis looks and says, hey, I think I can win a championship here. If he stays with the Pelicans, it's going to be because of 5 years, $235 million. That will be the reason he stays. They cannot cobble together at this point. They can make the team better, but to honestly say we're a championship, I can see a championship contender here, they won't be. It reminds me a lot of KG in Minnesota at the end there.
This is the ultimate test of the Supermax. This is what it was made for. This is why the owners wanted to put it in, to give a small market team such a leg up that a player this good could not say no. And right now,
players keep passing on it.
I would predict, if you'd asked me to right now, I would predict he turns it down.
Yeah, and players keep passing on that Supermax. Kawhi Leonard could have taken it in San Antonio. He walked away from it.
The same issue could potentially affect the dynastic Golden State Warriors. Draymond Green could make himself eligible for a Supermax. Klay Thompson could make himself eligible for a Supermax. And we've seen the drama that happened last month with KD and Draymond, and the whole league is sort of waiting. Like, is this going to be the end of the Warriors? And everyone says, you know, are they picking between KD and Draymond? Do they have to pick? And I'm like, Kevin Durant might make that decision for him. He's got a lot of, has all the agency.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is he's, Draymond Green, unless he's willing to take significantly less money, and he hasn't been inclined, he hasn't talked that way so far, they can't pay four max contracts. So unless, if KD stays and Klay stays, unless Draymond's willing to take a lot less, they can't afford him. And that's the irony of that whole, you know, of the dust up they had is, you know, ultimately, you know, they can't pay everybody. And you'll see a different Golden State team that will have more minimum role players around. The days of the Livingstons and Iguodalas, they won't be able to do that in the, over the stretch of this next, you know, these next max deals.
Well, the whole league is crossing its fingers that you are correct. And we will learn a lot about this over the next couple months leading to the trade deadline. Woj, it'll be fun.
Zach, can't wait.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.